Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Thanks, Michelle, and thanks, everyone. Welcome again to this webinar with our presenter today on mindful resilience and post-traumatic growth with Dr. Christopher Willard. He's a psychologist and educational consultant based in Boston who seriously and is passionately specializes in mindfulness. He currently serves on the board of directors at the Institute for Meditation and Psychotherapy and is the president of the Mindfulness in Education Network, as well as teaching at Harvard Medical School. He brings his own 20-year meditation experience and leading hundreds of workshops around the world to this presentation today. You'll find his very interesting TED Talks online. One that I really enjoyed, Christopher, was Kindness and the Atheist Case for Karma. I really love that. And especially your little snapshot around simple acts of kindness and how taking this, how those simple acts regularly imprinted can be a gift forward in generations. Dr. Christopher Willard is also author of 12 books that are for parents, children, and professionals, including Growing Up Mindful and Alpha Breaths. I haven't read that, but I will get it. And your latest book, Chris, is Raising Resilience, the Wisdom and Science of Happy Families and Thriving Children. That's really great. And I love that you've got CUE modules for professionals and for parents online. And in there, being a breathwork practitioner 30 years, I love where you teach how to use the breath as a remote control for our minds, bodies, and emotions. So I'm really looking forward to your talk personally, and I know everyone else is. So please share with us your presentation, and thank you for being part of the Embodiment Conference.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everyone who's here tonight. I know I'm up against some stiff competition on network television as we record this. So this will be maybe a little bit more peaceful. So I'm a longtime mindfulness and meditation practitioner. And I am aware that I still look like I'm about 11 years old. That's because mindfulness keeps you young. But basically, I think back to the ways that mindfulness has helped me through difficult times. And when the pandemic began, I really started kind of a deep dive on resilience, post-traumatic growth, and actually just literally yesterday got in the mail a contract for a new book I'm doing on that topic. But I want to just go back in time to talk a bit about mindfulness and how it began for me. Now, I really feel like all of us, that mindfulness is really innate to human beings. It's something that can be taught, but it's really something that we can all access and get back in touch with. So when I was a kid, I remember certainly, different experiences like just walking quietly in the woods. Our camp counselors would say, let's, try to walk as silently as you can. And many years later, when I took a mindfulness course, realizing that if you've ever tried to walk as silently as possible, Well, that takes a lot of focus and concentration. And in fact, that's really something a lot like mindful walking. I also remember sitting down in the woods and they would say, let's just listen to all the sounds in the forest. And, you know, we thought we weren't going to hear anything as little kids. And then suddenly starting to notice, right, the trees whispering to each other and things like this. Or just looking up at the clouds in the sky with my dad. I'm saying, you know, you can make the clouds disappear with your mind if you put your mind to it. And, you know, again, you know, these were just things that to me were mindfulness before I ever even heard that word mindfulness. Here's a picture of me as a kid. Right. And fast forward a while, right? And I went off to college, to university, as we say here. And I was really struggling myself with anxiety, with depression, with substance abuse. And, you know, dropped out of college actually for a few years to find myself or get my shit together, however you want to put that, basically, and stumbled into mindfulness. My parents actually really, I was kind of a mess. They basically just dragged me on this mindfulness retreat with Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, who some folks might be familiar with. And suddenly my life really transformed. I was happier. I was more focused. I felt more creative. Right? So many different things really started to change for me. And I knew that I just wanted to continue to not just practice and explore mindfulness more deeply, but that I wanted to share this with more folks, you know, to be more resilient. So that eventually then brought me to graduate school in clinical psychology, and then starting to further research this topic of mindfulness and resilience in the last 10 years, doing a lot of traveling, teaching mindfulness all over the place and feeling so grateful. Nice to see you from Saudi. Oh my gosh, that is so far away. I did something for the MIDI Psych Association recently. There are some folks in Saudi there. But traveling all over the world in normal times, right? Sharing about mindfulness and resilience. And so, you know, that's really what I want to be sharing today is mindfulness and resilience. And so I thought maybe we would actually just start just by settling in for a moment. So I'll just ask folks just to sit upright. You can simply allow your eyes to close if that feels comfortable for you. I'll just ring the bell. And you can enjoy the sound of the bell as it fades. Just bringing your attention to your breath, just letting your breath extend a little bit on each exhale. Or perhaps just noticing sensations in your body, the air against your skin, the texture of the clothing, and your feet on the floor, or back and legs against the chair. Or perhaps just noticing any sounds that you're aware of. Just taking a few more moments just to allow yourself to make contact with the moment through your breath, sensations at the edges of your body, or senses like sound. And I'll just ring the bell once more. And you can just allow your eyes to open again. When you open your eyes, I'll actually invite you to not look back at the computer or raise your eyes. Actually, just look around the room a little bit. I learned at a conference a couple of years ago when I was in India, this practice called 20-20-20. Every 20 minutes, just look up for about 20 seconds and look about 20 feet or 20 meters if you're not in the US in the distance. And then just bringing your attention back again to the screen, and especially in times of screens in which we're all living, right, this is really useful. The way we even, you know, are in our posture hunched over actually really impacts our stress levels, our breath rate, in all these different ways that actually only make things worse. Right? So shifting our posture, looking out, that can give us a reset over the course of our busy day. So I want to come back to the pandemic and share a little bit about, you know, I remember the beginning of it for me in March, sitting in the backyard with my wife, looking out at the kids and trying to say something deep, like, you know, the kids will always remember this time. They'll never forget this. And my wife is actually a medical historian. She actually studies plagues and pandemics. It's her job and writes and teaches about them and how they change history. She said, Chris, 1,000 years from now, historians will be talking about this. No one is going to forget this time. And I was just reflecting, you know, how do I want to remember this time? How do I want to be remembered in this time? How do I want to remember myself in this time? And it was this time at the beginning of the pandemic, right? I remember there were so many people on social media. I'm going to run a marathon in my living room. I'm going to learn 5 languages. I'm going to read War and Peace, right? Of course, I've got kids. I've got a job. I don't have time for any of this. And I was thinking back to Jon Kabat-Zinn's got that famous quote about, right, are you a human being or are you a human doing? And really thinking about that during this pandemic. Back then, we thought it was going to be 2 weeks, right? But thinking, not what do I want to do in this time? But the question I've been challenging myself with, and when I go out and work with audiences online, of course, these days, right, is this question of not what do you want to do during this time, but who do you want to be during this time? The shorthand for that for me being, right, do I want to be the guy that took the last roll of toilet paper at the grocery store? Or do I want to be the guy that knocked on my neighbor's door and said, you know, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. Do you need anything? Right? Because crises like this can really help us clarify our values. And from there, what I want to talk about is how this actually allows us to come through this as individuals, as companies, as groups, as communities, as countries, hopefully as a globe, stronger after a really difficult and challenging time. And so, you know, another kind of story that I want to just share a little bit is I heard someone describe back at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, how do I talk to my kids about this? And that's somewhat of interest to me, having kids myself. And this is Lori Gottlieb in The Atlantic. She said, you know, we've all been on airplanes, right? When you're on the airplane, you're flying along and then suddenly like, boom, right? You know, the plane shakes, there's turbulence. Everyone kind of looks around all anxious, right? And the captain gets on and says something like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we're experiencing turbulence. And then everyone just kind of takes a breath and calms back down because they just learned that the engine didn't fall off, right? And the pilot says from there, right, you know, we're gonna, you know, ask you to stay in your seat with your seatbelts fastened. We're gonna get you into the gate safely today, but we're gonna be a few minutes late to our destination today. So just stay in your seat, relax. And everyone calms down and just goes back to their Sudoku puzzles or whatever. And that, as leaders in particular, whether you're in a nonprofit or a corporate or a academic or a, you know, medical, whatever your environment is, NGO, right? As a leader, you're setting the tone for everybody else. If the captain is scared on the plane, I don't want to know that the captain is scared, right? I want them to pretend that they're calm if the engine fell off, right? Not tell me that and just tell me I'm going to get there safely. We're going to get to our destination, and we will, which is also so important. We will get to our destination. We don't know when, but we will get there. This will end at some point, right? There will be a vaccine. There will be therapeutics that get us through this. And then the calm starts to ripple out through everybody in the company, in the hospital, in the community, in the airplane. And the research also really backs this up too, which I find so interesting. Mindfulness, calm, it is contagious, right? In families, when parents practice mindfulness, the kids are calmer and better behaved, fewer accidents. In couples, when one person is practicing mindfulness, the other person in the couple says that they're happier, right? People living together, we're all stuck with just a few people, most of us in the world, right? Actually, our mood impacts the people around us. You can watch it spread from person to person to person when we're practicing mindfulness and other things that build resilience. Right? We see this in the corporate world too, how much leaders really set the tone for everybody else, right? Walking into a room, walking into a Zoom call maybe, right? And rippling out, impacting the mood of everybody else there. So the research, in addition, shows us that mindfulness, resilience, these things are contagious, really, in a way that's quite powerful. So if we want to change the world, right, we can really start with ourselves, managing our own stress, our own anxiety during these incredibly difficult times. I'm so sick of saying unprecedented times. Apparently there's a Google, like the Google search for, you know, uncertain times went up a million times. I gotta try to use other words, all right, during whatever it is that we're doing, a pandemic. So what is this idea of post-traumatic growth? Well, what post-traumatic growth is how individuals and groups of people come out difficult situations stronger than when they went in. And what I found most surprising over the past few months of research I've been doing is that that's actually the norm. We think of post-traumatic stress disorder as the norm after something difficult. In fact, it's post-traumatic growth. More insight, more wisdom, more strength, more resilience. So many things like that that people learn through difficult experiences. New priorities, a clarification of our values, right? As we think about, right, looking back, who do I want to be during this time? Right? Other people discovering things like mindfulness or spirituality, right? It was only through crisis that I found mindfulness and that path to healing for myself. So, right, now there's certain things, of course, that make it more likely that we have post-traumatic growth and more likely that we have post-traumatic stress. And so what I want to be sharing with you today are what are the things that really cultivate more post-traumatic growth than post-traumatic stress? As a clinical psychologist, I'm interested in what creates thriving and what creates unhappiness, misery, mental illness, right? Suffering in ourselves, in our bodies, in our minds. The model that people mostly think about these days, people call it the biopsychosocial model. Very fancy sounding. But basically it means, right, are you thriving physically with your body? Are you thriving mentally with your brain, your mind? And are you thriving socially? Are you thriving in your networks, in your relationships? All of these things help us to become more resilient. So the way I frame this talk is exploring mindful resilience through our bodies, through our minds and brains, as well as through our relationships, all of which are going to keep us resilient. So what does this really start to look like? Well, I want to turn at first toward this idea of mindfulness in our bodies. How can we create more stronger bodies, more mindful bodies? And what are some of the things that we can do to bring more mindfulness to our bodies, which we're going to need for physical resilience? Actually, in fact, if we're going to, you know, if we do happen to any of us get sick, fall sick with this thing, right? As well as thinking about, you know, how in a, you know, in a leadership role, can we encourage this, right, in some of the folks that we work with? So what are some of the things we do? Well, to be able to function in our bodies, we need a few basics, right? We need sleep, we need exercise, we need to eat a little bit more healthfully. And we need to breathe. Now, of course, we all breathe, right? But there's increasingly so much great research on the breath. Great new book, James Nestor, right? Called Breathe, right? Wim Hof has his new book just came out a couple of weeks ago about how our breath can really help us to reset, to recenter. In the lovely introduction I got, right? She was saying how I like to say, you can use your breath like a remote control to actually change what's happening in your nervous system, to get you out of that fight or flight mode that is no help to us at all, that shuts down our brain so we're not thinking clearly, right? That shuts down our bodies, right? So that we're, you know, getting stomach aches and not sleeping and, you know, all these other things. So what we want to do is find a way to regulate our breath. Where we want to get our breath is down to about 4 to 6 breaths in a minute, according to Kelly McGonigal, who's at Stanford. That's not a lot of breaths. That's a breath about every 10 to 15 seconds. What that does is it shuts off the alarm system in the brain, the amygdala and limbic system, and allows the blood to then flow out to the prefrontal cortex here, the insular cortex here. This is where a lot of our best thinking and impulse control, emotion regulation takes place. insular cortex where a lot of our social intelligence, emotional intelligence resides, taking other people's perspective, right? Seeing the big picture in different ways. We shift up our breath, right? Now we're really learning how to, in fact, more effectively, right, shift what's actually happening in our brain, shift gears in our brain when we're feeling overwhelmed. Let me just throw this slide up that I like to share often, right? Did you know that you can regulate your breath? Well, of course I knew that. That regulates your body, which in turn regulates your nervous system. Your brain's a part of that. And we know that your brain then regulates your attention, your impulses, and your emotions. So by finding these ways to breathe just a little bit more effectively, right, we can really shift gears and optimize our brains to be more resilient, disrupt that pattern. And finding ways to do this, right, if we're working from home or with our colleagues, right, to be opening, right, some of our Zoom meetings with, you know, just a moment of breathing with that 20-20-20 practice. Right? I'll just share a few simple breath practices that I like. One called the 7-11 breath, which is really just about as simple as it sounds to get us into that 4 to 6 breaths in a minute range. Just breathing in up to 7, breathe back out to 11. You can try this along with me. Breathing in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, back out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And breathing in up to 7. Back out to 11. In up to 7. And back out again to 11. You can just let your breath now find its own rhythm once more, just a bit more regulated. Maybe also noticing if there's been a shift in your mind. What else we can do, even just shifting our body can shift our breath. I learned from Fleet Mall, who's a guy that spent like 20 years in prison on drug charges. Now he does corporate trainings. If you just put your hands behind your head like this, you can't not breathe deeply. I dare you to try to not breathe deeply and slowly with your hands behind your neck like this. You're also stretching out, right? I know Stephen and Deb are in this embodiment conference. You're stretching out your vagus nerve, settling that down in terms of the fight or flight response. Stretching out all of your organs, stretching out your diaphragm so you can get more breath in, right? Just these simple kinds of things can actually just really shift it up a little bit, right? By bringing more mindful awareness or attention to our breath. Just a few tips on the breath. Moving forward a bit toward what else can we do with our body? Well, we can try to get exercise. And of course, we know that's not the easiest thing to do during the pandemic, right? But in fact, actually, what's been surprising, if you're not locked down, depending on where you are in the world, right? So many people are spending more time out in nature. So many people are spending more time, right? You know, exploring the world. I'm getting to know my neighborhood much more deeply. I've done a lot of mindful walking in the past, and I love walking in amazing places. Again, I usually get to travel for work, but I've gotten to know my own neighborhood so much more intimately. Right? This flower is in blossom today that was not in blossom yesterday. It's autumn where I am right now, right? I can watch every day as the leaves change just a little bit. The temperature, the sound of the birds is different in the morning than it is in the evening. Just being a bit more aware, right? How can I bring movement to work? You know, that's not the easiest thing. I do a lot of phone calls for work though, and I actually spend a lot of time just getting out and walking for hours on end on some of my phone calls with clients. I let them know that I'm doing that, right? But it actually is great for me. It's great for my body. And even just what the research finds is 20 minutes of light exercise, which is walking, just getting your heart rate up a little bit. That's as good for mild to moderate depression, anxiety, focus and attention issues as medication. especially even just walking, which if there's one exercise our bodies are designed to do through evolution, it's walking. Just walking and noticing the beauty in the world around us. Walking with your posture different, confident, right? Like Amy Cuddy's power poses, actually you can walk around with a sense of confidence that changes the body chemistry of what's happening, changes your perspective, changes how you feel. Simple ways of caring for our body with exercise. Now, I want to turn now a bit more toward eating. I know some folks have probably done some mindful eating. I did a mindful eating exercise in the first mindfulness course that I took and spent about a half an hour eating a raisin, which if you've never done that is actually an exercise that's really worth doing. And I remember walking out of that again, you know, I was really young at the time and I was like, you know, this is the most amazing thing in the world. I'm going to eat every meal like I just ate that raisin. You know, and a few hours later, I'm like, you know, shoveling pizza down my gullet or whatever. But for many years, I kept up with eating one mindful meal a week. Right? These days, that's even harder. But a few years ago, I actually started thinking about how can we do mindful eating in the real world? And so I wrote a little article about this, and it's actually gonna be in that new book, about what I call more mindful eating or real world mindful eating. Right? And we know that, right, healthy food, right, that's gonna boost our physical and our emotional immune system during stressful times. So mindless eating is like just eating past full, ignoring our body signals. More mindful eating is listening to our body and stopping when we're full. Mindless eating, eating because our emotions tell us to eat. I'm bored, I'm scared, I'm anxious, I'm lonely, I'm sad. More mindful eating, eating because our bodies tell us to eat. My stomach is growling, my energy is low. My mood is not so good, right? My wife would say I'm hangry, right? Mindless eating, actually would take out the eating alone at this point, but it's, you know, already in the little graphic. Eating alone at random times and places versus eating at more set times and places, deliberately, you know, thinking a little bit about what and when we're going to eat. Eating foods that are just emotionally comforting as opposed to eating foods that are also maybe nutritionally healthy. Eating and multitasking, doing five things at once, whereas, you know, compared to more mindful eating when we're eating, just eating, we're just enjoying company. And lastly, considering a meal to be an end product in some way, compared to thinking about eating as being connected to other people, connected to the earth. And I think this pandemic has really laid bare, right, that appreciation of those frontline workers, whether it's the folks working in the factories or the folks working at the grocery store or delivering our groceries. That's building more empathy and compassion and gratitude, as well as bringing a lot more mindfulness in and actually maybe having us think a little bit more about how sustainable is what we're eating these days. So that's just a thought on mindful eating in the real world, right? And, you know, tacking something up like this or talking about this, right, with the other folks you work with and other folks around you. Lastly, sleep is something a lot of us are not getting much of these days. And I know this is a very tall order. I know how many of us are working late into the night after being with the kids or unable to sleep because we're so anxious. But there are some things that we can do that can help. There's no magic bullet for sleep. If there was, right, we'd all be sleeping well. But some things help. One thing that helps is just simply putting your hands over your heart like this or giving yourself a little hug. Actually shuts off the cortisol, activates the oxytocin, which allows us to feel safe, connected, and then fall asleep. Later, just a simple relaxation practice. I've got this, learned this from a colleague of mine, the calm reminder. Just simply relaxing, tensing and releasing the muscles in these parts of our body, our chest, arms, legs, and mouth, which tend to be places where we hold a lot of tension. You can do this along with me in whatever posture you like. Eyes can be open or closed, but you can start just by taking a breath in. And then bring your attention to see your chest. Noticing right now, where is your breath? Is it high up and short and shallow in your chest, or lower down in your belly? Can you bring it down and deepen it? Heart beating fast or slow? And then just tensing the muscles throughout your chest. Give them a squeeze. And releasing. Next, bring your awareness into A for your arms, just noticing, are they still? Are they jittery with anxiety, stress? Are they curling into fists with frustration, or are they relaxed? Are your palms sweaty or dry? And once more, just tensing, squeezing fists, lower arms, upper arms, squeezing and letting go. Letting the relaxation flow into your chest and arms, and bring your awareness now, shining like a light down into your legs. Are they still, or are they bouncing up and down? Allowing them to become still. Tensing your legs from your feet through your calves and thighs. Holding. And releasing. And just letting go of your whole lower body, and bring your awareness now into your head, M for mouth. You might just notice what expression is resting on your face. What are you unconsciously communicating, both outward and inward? Fear or frustration, relaxation. And then just tensing your mouth and jaw, squeezing these muscles. And as you release, you can just release your mouth into just the slightest hint of a smile. That feels natural. Smiling to your mouth, to your legs, to your arms, to your chest. And once more, just raising or opening your eyes. This kind of progressive muscle relaxation can really help us to settle before bed, to maybe get a little bit of sleep in the midst of this. So turning away now from mindfulness of body and toward mindfulness of mind, which sounds a little bit silly, right? But how do we clear our minds a little bit to see a bit more clearly? And this is what mindfulness can help with. Right? Not quite so muddled up. We know that when we're under stress, it impacts our brain. We start that prefrontal cortex where we think things through, that shuts down. Our critical thinking starts to shut down. We see things in more black and white ways. We don't see the, kind of nuances of things, right? We get into anger and blame. This is why we see things like conspiracy theories during the pandemic. This is why we see things like, so much anger and frustration and blaming. Our brains are not working. They're not seeing clearly, right? We're seeing danger around every corner, right? We're also wired with what's called the negativity bias, which means that we're only mostly going to click on, right, the most terrifying articles or the, most negative doom and gloom things that we see on Twitter or our Facebook feed. We're wired for that. Unfortunately, also a lot of companies know that, the social media and media companies. So we just keep, making ourselves feel worse and worse. What we want to do is to be able to see more clearly, to kind of, clear the windshield a little bit that's gotten fogged up, right, with our anxiety and stress. We can do that in a few ways. We can do that just by knowing that our thoughts are thoughts, not necessarily real. Right? I sometimes even just take note of what are my biggest fears right now, or what are the thoughts I keep having, right? I'm gonna get sick, or my parents are gonna get sick, or I'm gonna lose my job, or everything's gonna fall apart, we're gonna lose the house, or the kids will get, write those things down. And then I just sometimes just write in front of those things. This comes from acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm having the thought that I'm going to get sick. I'm having the thought that my parents will get sick. I'm having the thought that I'm gonna lose my job. I'm having the thought that whatever that fear is, and start to get a little bit of distance from it. Oh, it's just a thought. This is what we call mindfulness, right? Again, you know, mindfulness without meditation, in a sense, right? Really helps us to just see again, just a little bit more clearly. Not believe everything we think. We can also practice things like gratitude, appreciation, right? This can sound like something that's kind of Pollyanna-ish, but in fact, what gratitude and appreciation allow us to do is to see more clearly. If we're wired to see the negative, right? What we're trying to do is actually bring in a bit more of the positive, not pretend that negative isn't there, not some spiritual bypass, but to also make sure we're looking at the positive. So just, you know, maybe taking a moment now, just thinking back over the day behind you, whether you've been up for an hour, whether you've been up for 14 hours, what were some nice moments in the day? Right, a nice cup of coffee, connection with your partner, right? Something went well at work, just bringing that to mind, noticing the scene, who was there. How did your body feel? How does it feel now as you bring it to mind? And then I'll ask you just to raise your eyes once more. And if you feel comfortable, just throwing into the chat box, right, what your thing or things were today that you were grateful for. I type in, there was sunshine and birds were singing and I spent so much time outside today. It was just wonderful. Right, it's you know, we're almost at winter here. So just, you know, taking a little bit of time, right? Walk on the beach, wonderful, right? Sunshine, warm air, getting out of the house. Whatever you feel comfortable putting in there. And when we share what we're grateful for, right, with others, it becomes more real, right? Qigong out in front of the trees, leaves falling, right? So many wonderful things. Outdoors with the plants, right? Which actually brings me to the next piece, which is, you know, thinking about the way, one of the things that, you know, stress has done, right, is it causes us to regress in all kinds of ways, right? Unhealthy ways, right? Watch my 6-year-old act like a 2-year-old and myself feel, you know, a little bit less mature than I used to. But we're also regressing in these other ways. I feel like so many of us are doing things like connecting with nature, gardening, right? Cooking, all these things that the pandemic has done are about, you know, kind of our more primitive human selves, about survival, redecorating our home, right? Kind of that nesting thing, feeling cozy, right? We're all kind of doing these things that actually really, you know, bring us back to our evolutionary roots in our best way possible, as well as sometimes, you know, not always bringing out the best in us, right? These are such a wonderful, right? Walking the bush with the dogs, the flowering roses, grateful for life, clients, children singing, grateful to be here. So I lastly want to turn now toward bringing more mindfulness into our social worlds, into our relationships. And we are so isolated during this time. And as leaders, whether it's a leader in your company or your NGO, leader in your family, leader in your community, right? It's so important to find ways to keep people connected. Like what I've been hearing from people is this loneliness. You know, like, I don't miss going to the office like all that much, right? You know, but what I miss is like the water cooler talk, right? Talking around the break room, just hearing about my right? My coworker's kids or their last vacation, right? It's those little moments, those in-between moments. You get on Zoom, there's no like, tell me about your day or, you know, chit chat before the meeting. It's just like all business and then offline again. We miss that human contact. And a lot of us are physically alone as well. There's a saying I heard once, you know, if your mind is a dangerous neighborhood, don't go there alone, which I love, right? It's so important to connect. So just encouraging you to reach out when you're having a hard time, but reach out when you're doing well. If you're a leader, right, keep reaching out to everybody, encouraging them to reach out to each other, right? Buddying people up with each other in a sense, right? To stay connected and also to stay connected around the positive. This is so important when we get so negative. When is this stupid pandemic going to end? Oh my gosh, winter is coming up, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, right? Or, you know, elections or, you know, who knows what, right? Everyone's so on edge, right? Can we talk about something positive? There's a few articles over the summer, Northern Hemisphere summer, that were like, how to have a conversation with someone that's not about the pandemic. And I was like, this is genius. It's true. But, you know, like what recipe are you trying? What show are you watching? What books are you reading these days? What, questions like that, right? That are about the positive, right? Have you got any good recipes for me to try out, right? Also remembering that this will end and we will get to go on vacation again. There's this study from Positive Psychology that found long before the pandemic, if you plan a vacation, even if you never take it, your mood will be better, right? For a couple weeks. So plan that vacation, right? That you're gonna take next July or September or after you get your vaccine or something, right? Plan that vacation. Who are you gonna invite to your party, right? A barbecue in the backyard when this is over? Which friends are you gonna see? What restaurant are you gonna go to, right? What are you gonna see at the theater, right? Keeping it future oriented, keeping that the topic of conversation with the people around you, it just lifts us all up, which is not, again, pretending that that bad stuff isn't there, but actually being more optimistic. And this is in that karma, atheist case for karma TED talk, being optimistic actually makes us more creative so that we see more opportunities and possibilities is what's actually so cool about it. Helps us see new things. Right? We can also find other ways to set better boundaries. Another expression that I've always loved is, if you're the average of the five people, you know, you spend the most time with, right? Consider who you choose to spend your time with. And a lot of us are stuck with just five people, right? Or maybe fewer than that, maybe a few more in our pods and our families and our living situations or work. We can't choose everybody, but we can set better boundaries with the people that we are with. Both, you know, kind of negative boundaries, like don't bother me at this time, as well as positive boundaries, you know, like, yes, please come and let's spend time together in this way. We can also, right, in terms of, you know, thinking about who we spend time with, right, we're spending a lot of time online. I actually took a few months off from Facebook and social media. It was just so negative for me. I just found it so negative, right? It's all like, everyone else's pandemic is better than mine. Everyone else looks so happy, right? And then political arguments and, you know, crazy stuff going on online. You know, if you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, then online you're the average of the five people who post the most in your Facebook feed. And those people are not usually posting fun, supportive things. They're usually the doom and gloom, you know, the kind of kookier people. You can just hide people. You can snooze people. You can unfollow people. And it's great. It feels so good. I can't recommend it enough. 30 days, this person's posting something nuts, snooze, 30 days, right? Don't have to see them. More just, you know, puppies and gardens and sourdough starters, right? On my Facebook feed, it really helps with the sanity, right? So blocking that negativity, right? They do follow up on those people whose trips didn't pan out. Like whether they went on the trip or not, they're still happier. What else can we do when we're feeling overwhelmed, right? When we feel helpless, one of the best things that we can do is be helpful. Mr. Rogers, this great American children's TV host, there's this quote from him, right, where he says, when I was a boy, I'd see scary things in the news. My mother would say to me, look for the helpers. You'll always find people that are helping. Not only are we looking for the helpers, we can be the helpers. Right? We can be the person that gets groceries for our neighbors. We can teach a friend to cook online, because I can't believe how many people don't know how to cook, right? We're learning now, right? 7 months in, we can, right, make food. You know, my parents are sick. They live a few blocks away, not sick with COVID, right? But, you know, I drop off food from them. We can listen to people. We can talk, right? My parents, they read books online to my kids, right? It's the sweetest thing over FaceTime, right? You know, people writing inspiring chalk quotes around the city that I live in, creating artwork, right, with chalk, right? Making those posters, thanking the first responders, right? Sewing masks, right? Putting up the bears in the windows for kids, you know, bear hunts, right? Things like that, right? There's a lot that we can do. And when we feel like we're helping, it does so much for our stress and anxiety, makes us feel so much more resilient. And guess what else that does on the other side? Not only are we more resilient, everyone in our community is more resilient because we're connecting, right? Actually creating new connections with people in our communities who maybe we wouldn't have gotten to know before, right? Before we started sending, you know, gifts off to the retirement community where they can't have visitors, right? Or playing concerts for neighbors in the street, right? All of these kinds of things that we can do. You don't have to be incredibly creative or anything like that either, or a great cook. You can just do what you can do best. Right? All of these things, right, can really make a difference to yourself, to the people around you, to the larger community, making it stronger. Right? No more sourdough starters. Thanks, Cameron. I won't send you mine. I actually never even made the sourdough in this whole time, but literally everyone I talk to in the world seems like they are. So as we wind down with time, I just want to close with a self-compassion practice that I think can be really, really, it stinks literally. Yeah. So I'll just invite us to do this one last practice together again. Eyes can be open or closed, or just, you know, resting on the keyboard, I guess, in front of you. I'll just ring the bell. I'll just ask you to bring to mind maybe it's a difficult situation in your life. Not too big, not too difficult, but maybe a little moment where you weren't at your best. You messed up you let yourself on mute for a whole Zoom call, or you snapped at the kids, or you're running late for something. A time when you were kind of critical with yourself, where you heard that critical voice. Right. What's the matter with you? Why do you always do this? Just bringing that time, that image to mind. Again, something small. And then I'll invite you just to kind of name this. Right? Oh, this stinks. This sucks. This is a moment of suffering. This is painful. I don't like this. Just name it, see if anything happens. And then consider if a friend or a colleague, a kid had come up to you with, you know, the same little mistake, running late or something, right? How might you act? Right, you might just give them a hug, put an arm around them, and you might just even give yourself a bit of a hug, or just place a hand over your heart, feel that gentle warmth, and the words you might use. Right? This is hard. We all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. Maybe even a little bit more than that, aware that all of us in this session, all of us around the world are feeling not so perfect these days, feel like we're not doing enough. No one in the world feels like they're doing this pandemic, right? I'm just one of them. None of us are doing this perfectly. No one's figured out the perfect balance during this challenging moment in our history. Every parent, every worker, every child, every colleague, right? Every friend feels like they're not quite doing this right, that they're not quite doing enough. We're all in this together, and just making a wish for yourself as well as maybe for the rest of us here, and perhaps everyone in the world. But just may you be kind to yourself. May you go easy on yourself. May you learn from this. May you move on, do better tomorrow. May you let this go. Just repeating whatever words and phrases resonate for you. And I'll ring the bell once more. And you can just raise your eyes or just allow them to open. And just remembering that we're not alone in this. And as we move forward, hopefully caring for ourselves and the people around us, caring for our minds with mindfulness, caring for our bodies a bit more deliberately, mindfully, and caring for relationships, attending to them with more mindfulness. We can all come through this a bit stronger, a bit more resilient in ourselves and our communities and beyond, and really thinking. I'll just encourage you just to reflect, right? Not just what do I want to do before this is over, but really who do I want to be? And just reflecting on that. So thank you all so much for being here at this conference. Thank you for participating. And I certainly wish you all the very best. Yeah, thank you. Please stay in touch. I've got my email up here. And if you want to follow me on social media, you're welcome to find me there too. My Instagram is at Dr. Chris Willard. I'm doing actually a self-care challenge for the month of October every day. November, I'm either going to do a gratitude challenge or I'm going to do a movement and mindful walking challenge. Haven't decided yet which I'm going to do for that.
That's great. Thank you. That's great to hear about those challenges, Chris. Yes. And of course, then you've got the modules online for CUE. And I think they would also be appropriate for parents. They don't have to be for professionals. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. I'm sure everybody enjoyed that. I think we've got a couple of minutes. There was just a couple. I think someone said, was there some one small thing that we can do each day? But maybe you can come back to that. So I just need to give some information about the links, etc., and then we'll come back to you and give you another moment and your takeaway, the thing that your top tip for putting in place in life. But I'll come back to that in just a moment. So thanks everyone for being here for this wonderful, my nervous system feels very, very settled. And in amongst that, I had a bite of a sandwich and I had it mindfully, not quite 30 bites, but choose, but like the raisin exercise. But
gotta do what you gotta do.
considerably more than I normally do. So please, if you'd like to connect with Chris, as you heard, you can follow him on social media. In the chat room, you'll find links to his website and ongoing work and courses. For the Embodiment Conference participants, of course, it still goes for a few more days. So you can go to the Embodiment link and follow any of the channels. There's some great sessions coming on after this. As a way to support the Embodiment Conference, I really invite you, if it's possible for you, if it's in your possibilities, to purchase the library. I think the special offer ends today, the 25th, but if you do apply now and mention that special offer, you'll still be able to receive that. So it's a wonderful way to make this work extraordinarily reachable and achievable and available for literally hundreds of thousands of people who might not normally be exposed to this work. So let's hope that raises the collective consciousness and we all go forward, connect to our breath, mindfully go forward in life as Chris invites us to do. So there are all the links. You can go to the coffee chat after this too. So there's a link in your thing that you can go to a coffee chat room after this, but library, consider it, coffee chat, check out the other panels. And again, coming back to you, Chris, thank you so much. I've seen your work. I love that you're introducing it to children and so widely. And I invite you to share with us what your top tip might be for a takeaway today.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of ending on that note of just being gentle with yourself, especially during, you know, during this craziness that we're in right now with this pandemic, just really trying to be kind to yourself. And that doesn't mean, you know, letting yourself off the hook, you know, totally for, you know, when we do mess up, but it's just, you know, being kind to ourselves so that we can learn from our mistakes and keep doing better and all muddle forward and, you know, share what we're learning through this pandemic with each other so that we can all come out of this a lot more, yeah, just a lot more optimistic and a lot more resilient. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I agree with that. And that our acts of kindness towards ourselves are something that will be imprinted in the DNA of our children and impact yes. those around us. I loved how you expressed that in your TED talk. So let us all go well. Thank you again for your time that you've gifted to the Embodiment Conference. It was really a stellar webinar. I'm really, really grateful for it and learned a lot even after my 30 years working with the breath. I've already got some really great tips. So thank you so much. And thank you everyone for participating from around the world. Go Absolutely. Well. And
hopefully I'll get to all your places at some point next year, right?
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
Fantastic. We're catching every Thanks. Invite for 2021.
Yeah.
Care, everybody. Have a right. wonderful
morning. Have to come to Australia. That would be super.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay. There's a thought bubble. Thanks, Chris. Thank you so much. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Janine.